Ken Forrester, Executive Director at Momenta. Welcome to our Digital Thread podcast, produced by, for, and about digital industry leaders. In this series of conversations, we capture insights from the best and brightest minds in digital industry. They're executives, entrepreneurs, advisors, and other thought leaders. What they have in common is, like our team at Momenta, they are deep industry operators. We hope you find these podcasts informative, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Good day and welcome to episode 201 of our Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. Today, I'm pleased to host Michelle Bachman, former president of Stanley X and chief simplification and transformation officer at Stanley Black & Decker. Ms. Bachman has more than 20 years of experience leading major corporate transformations across matrix enterprise organizations and scaling startups. Prior to her leadership role at Stanley, she served as the CEO of 3D Control Systems, held multiple executive positions in service, supply chain, sales, and product development at GE Healthcare and Industrial Solutions, and served as the general manager and global head of automotive, 3D printing, and digital manufacturing at Hewlett-Packard. She was inducted into the Women in Manufacturing Hall of Fame 2022 and was named by 3dprint.com as one of the most inspiring women in the additive manufacturing industry. She's won the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award, the nation's highest presidential honor for performance excellence. Michelle is a champion of women in science, technology, engineering, and manufacturing, so STEM, and is passionate about developing diverse talent for the workforce of the future. Michelle, welcome to our Digital Thread podcast.
Thanks, Ken. I really appreciate all the wonderful things you just said about me. It was like, who is that? Oh, that's me. So it's great. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it. And thank you for having me here. And it's such a pleasure. So I'm just really happy to be sharing this with you all.
Yeah. And look, I really appreciate you taking the time as well. The bio in the front, you have earned clearly. And so well deserved to provide a summary of it at the beginning. So, you know, we call this the Digital Thread podcast and talking about one's individual digital thread that really brought them to where they are now. What would you consider to be your digital thread? In other words, the one or more thematic threads that define your digital industry journey?
Well, I would say I kind of go back to when I first started. So I'm a mechanical engineer. So I started in manufacturing as a mechanical engineer on the manufacturing floor. And back then, I'm not going to tell you when, but it was a while ago, we would actually do time studies manually. Everything was analog. And as I progressed through my career, we started learning statistical process control, SPC, TQM, total quality management. Toyota brought in Six Sigma. And so early on in my career, I took those early learnings from the analog and started to make those digital, starting even in automotive at that period of time, and using analytics to determine like if a production line was starting to drift out of control, say, or if a product was out of tolerance, we were able to start doing that at an early time. And as I went through my career, I started implementing ERP into manufacturing, started looking at how do we gather test results off of machines from more than, I would say, gathering the test results off of the machine by downloading into an Excel spreadsheet, as opposed to having it kind of go into the cloud and gathering it that way. That was the early days. And then it just started progressing. So we got into cloud computing. We got into machine learning. So as those machines were starting to drift, it would start correcting itself on a production line, as an example. I was key in implementing ERP into production, as well as like lean methodology, which you take the two together, and it really provides a powerful manufacturing facility. And so as I've gone through my career, I have gone through from analog, implementing all of these digital threads to even at GE Digital, where we started connecting teams and gathering information to drive productivity for the company, to 3D printing. So all throughout my career, I've had this digital thread. And those are just a few examples of what I've done in the industrial space. And then what I like is the fact that I remember commercially or personally, I would have an Apple phone or even a BlackBerry back then. And I remember scratching my head, like, why can't we take this application and use it in manufacturing? And sure enough, over the years we did. So it's kind of like that personal digital thread, and then the industrial kind of starts to meet. And we see that today if you go into an advanced manufacturing facility or a plant, a manufacturing plant, and what they're making and how they're making it.
What a great background. And we'll deep dive into each of those elements you mentioned. Let's start with GE. So you are a 15-year plus veteran of GE's healthcare and industrial business. And I might add, at a very formative time for GE, especially GE Digital. If you had to summarize your time into three learnings that are relative to manufacturing, what would those be?
So I would say, you know, I spent the majority of that at GE Healthcare, and they just went public. So I am super proud of everybody over there. It's been a long time coming. We wanted that to happen many, many years ago. The learnings, the first one would be change, and don't underestimate change in the amount of change that has to happen and how you have to go after change. A lot of folks or a lot of companies will start at their senior leaders and hope that it just, the change happens. Well, that's not typically going to work. You have to work through middle management. You have to work with the folks on the floor and actually let them be part of the solution and driving that change, and let them feel like they are owning it and that it's part of their DNA. And so I think change, and don't underestimating change, is really important. I would say simpler is better. Don't over-engineer anything. You know, whether it's a product or a production line or a facility or a company, it's like you start getting too complicated and all of a sudden it's taking you a lot longer to do anything that you should be doing in a very quick period of time. And I know a lot of corporates are trying to become more like startups, you know, nimble and simple. And then, of course, the startups are trying to be more like corporate because they're trying to scale. But it's really this balance of just being simple. The third one is people. All about developing the next generation of leaders. I'm so proud when I have someone who has worked for me become an executive or go off and be a CEO at a company. And it's just, don't underestimate how much time you need to take personally to develop yourself and your team individually and as a team. And it's something that I've done over the years is when I finally get my team together, if I'm going into a new org and I have the right members on the team, pulling them in and making sure every quarter we do some sort of leadership development individually and as a group. And you just get better and stronger when you have that team and it's a diverse team.
Very nice. What I really appreciate is the combination of technology and I'll say people or change management that comes in there. We often, when we talk digital transformation, we seem to focus on the digital and not the transformation. And really is digital becomes the catalyst or should be really the catalyst for much of the transformation. So having a foot in both those worlds to affect and execute changes is quite critical. You know, if I guess kind of divide your career, as you talked about in three steps, we talked GE. The next one is really interesting for me. So you joined Hewlett-Packard in 2017, leading their 3D printing business. So another very formative time, and later became CEO at 3D Control Systems. What attracted you to the 3D printing space, and what were some of your key accomplishments during this time?
So when I first started in manufacturing, I went from being in a plant to being on site at Jeep Truck Engineering in Detroit. And we were down in the engineering lab and we were doing a tolerance stack of an axle. So it's in the drivetrain of a vehicle. And we're down there and I just saw a 3D printed carrier. It's like the major part in the middle of the axle. And I was like, what is this? And so they took me over. I got a tour of this little 3D printing room and learned all about it. And that was like my first learning of what 3D printing was and could be. We 3D printed that carrier because it was a lot cheaper than going and buying tooling and having to wait, you know, 3 or 4 months for the tooling to come. And by the way, if you do a tolerance stack and you've already got the tooling, then you got it and something doesn't look right, it doesn't measure right, then you got to go back and redo the tooling. And that takes a long time. So 3D printing, I just saw the immediate value, you know, 20 plus years ago. And then used it again when I was leading spare parts or logistics for GE Healthcare. We kept having to do last time buys for suppliers that were either going out of business or it was end of life for a product, but we still had to source that product for our customers, you know, for 30 years. And so to keep that inventory on the shelf was a lot of money, a lot of cash just sitting there. So if we could 3D print that, you know, that just helps the company's bottom line tremendously. And so that was another stint that I did in implementing 3D printing. So throughout my career, I kind of had this little, I don't know, I'd say kind of a passion for 3D printing, even though I wouldn't even probably have known it at the time, but I did. And so when this opportunity came to me from HP to go over to the startup within the corporation, I was like, oh my gosh, I got to do this. This is really cool. And I can't wait to do it. And so when we went in there, it was about how do we find product market fit, which applications are going to really ring true with customers, which are going to create value and help them get to market faster, as an example. So got in there, and then we ended up doing a study and found out that automotive was an area that we should be focusing in. And so I took on the automotive P&L. Actually, we developed it. And I would say one of the things that I'm most proud of is seeing these automotive companies go all the way through to market with a 3D printed part. And it's a very long period of time. And every single milestone is like a victory. So once you pass this test or that test or that test, then you're like, oh yeah, we're getting closer. We're getting closer. Okay, the cost, we've done the business model. We're getting closer. We're getting there. And then all of a sudden when you see it in a car, it's like, wow, that's cool. That's something we worked on with our customers. And you're so proud of it. So that is one thing that I was proud of when I was there.
That's a lot to be proud of. And I like how you took working at a large corporation and spun that into a startup or entrepreneurial activity as well, even though, as you said, it was a part of HP. So you clearly did well at that, because right after that, Stanley Black & Decker hired you as president of something called Stanley X. So the innovation business of Stanley Black & Decker. Can you tell us a bit about your remit there and of what you are most proud?
Yeah, so that was my dream job. It was like corporate meets startup, and I was so excited to join. And when I did, the team was amazing. And, you know, I took a look at what we were working on and talked to my manager about where we should be focusing. So we actually stopped doing some things. We started doing some things and continuing other things. And so we ended up investing in some startups, like seed round startups. And then we develop our own product or software. And lastly, we had a venture studio where we would take ideas, say from mega trends or what's going on in the market or what customers came up with. We had good relationships with a lot of customers that gave us input. And then we would take a business and work with or the idea and take an expert in residence and create a business from it. And then from that business, we would spin it out and we would fund it and help them scale. So that was incredibly exciting. We ended up focusing in construction technology as well as manufacturing. So those were the two areas. Before that, it was a little bit of everything. So we shut some of those efforts down and really focused on those two areas. And I would say, you know, the most challenging and the most proud I could be of what the work was that we did was just finding that product market fit. It's so difficult when you're in a startup or any company, like really trying to find that product market fit. And then the debate on my team, like, what is product market fit? When do you know you have it? So it was a great debate. And so when we had some offerings that actually had product market fit, that was really, you know, just incredible, an incredible feeling. And the team was wonderful. And we just had a really good time over there focusing on how to innovate for the future of Stanley Black & Decker.
It's Stanley X was a fairly advanced innovation structure, as best as I can tell from the outside in. Clearly, you probably one of the first to put in such a structure, but I'm curious, who did you look to in terms of pure industrial companies as a potential trend center in innovation as you guys designed Stanley X?
So I didn't necessarily look to our peers. Of course, I would see what everybody was doing, but early in my career, I took this executive class and it was around innovation. And the professor at Crotonville, G. Crotonville, had talked about three boxes. And the first box of innovation is to look around. What are your competitors doing? What sequential, what kind of step function more can you do than they, you know, that either competes with them or takes a step above them? And so that's that box one, and that's fine. What I like is box two and box three. So box two is really looking at other industries like Uber, Apple, Tesla. Like, what are they doing that has moved the needle and their customers are pulling that would apply to us? And how do we make that apply to us? And so box two is really interesting to me. And then box three is like ideas way out there, like disruptive business models. And a good example, one there is a company called Smile Direct. I don't know if you've heard of them, but well, first of all, there's Invisalign or Align Technologies that disrupted sort of the orthodontics market with the plastic retainers. And then Smile Direct comes along and goes direct to consumer with orthodontists kind of online, and they have pop-up smile shops. And so they totally disrupted that market, and they were a cheaper price point. So I just love this end-to-end kind of disruptive business model that aligns in that box three. So that's how I think about innovation and trendsetters. I look at mega trends as well, like what's happening across the world and how do we get ahead of it. And COVID actually helped a lot of those mega trends become reality.
Yeah, we used to joke about it being a black swan, and then the Panama Canal black swan and the Ukraine black swan. It feels like it's a whole flock at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me drill down in one aspect of Stanley X and proceed. I'll just tell a short story. Guido Jouret was the former chief digital officer at ABB, and when he left ABB, I knew him well going into there. But I interviewed him in a podcast, and one of the questions I asked was, you know, as chief digital officer, if you had to do it over again, what would you do differently? And he said two words, venture studios. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of tickled by the fact that you mentioned venture studioing earlier. If you had the opportunity to restart Stanley X, knowing what you know now and really about the venture studio model, what would you do differently?
Well, so there's two different types of venture studio models. There are the ones that are within a corporation, and then there's the ones, you know, that sit outside, say in like a venture capitalist group or in another area. Well, when they're in the corporates, what you have to think about is like, how does this help your business? And so our studio model was, when I first got there, was like, it didn't matter. We would spin the business out and let them go for funding, and whatever it was is what it was. However, being part of Stanley Black & Decker, we needed to make sure that if there was a competitive advantage that the software or the hardware had that could help Stanley Black & Decker, we needed to embrace that and bring it back in and not let it go. So it was always kind of this chicken and the egg, whether they had product market fit, and if they had product market fit, bring it in. But if they didn't, and it wasn't quite there, and you had them go out for funding, then you're going to miss out. So it was like, my viewpoint was, if it's in a corporate setting and there is a competitive advantage, you need to keep that inside the walls, but keep it separated enough that allows it to scale and allows it not to be burdened with corporate processes. And so that's what I would have done differently. And we were actually starting to do that.
That's probably one of the biggest challenges of corporate venture studio models. I always joke the litmus test is, when I make the first hire in this venture studio, do I have to use the corporate HR? And you could go down the list of finance, operations, compliance, et cetera, right? And if the answer is yes, then you know it's probably too closely bound, to be honest, right?
Yeah.
And so that's certainly been our experience, as we've worked helping strategics set up venture studios, but also helping to kind of scale some of these up as well. It's the old adage, if you love something, set it free, right? Doesn't quite work when it comes to a lot of corporate venture cap or corporate studios. So
yeah,
I know you most recently took on the role of Chief Simplification and Transformation Officer at Stanley Black & Decker. Love the title, by the way. The transformation part I can figure out, but what exactly does a Chief Simplification Officer do?
Yeah, so our CEO was very passionate about making sure that we focused on simplification. And it was because sometimes if there's a process in place, say like an internal process, and it's been there over the years and it's just compounded and you keep building more processes, more toll gates in it because there's reasons like risk or compliance or level of approval that's needed. And all of a sudden you look one day and it's like, wow, it's taken, I don't know, 6 months to get capital approval for some equipment. And that just doesn't necessarily make sense. And so it was really taking a step back and looking at overall processes internally and externally. We wanted to be simpler for our employees to work and simpler for our customers to work with us. And so it was taking a step back and really evaluating what those processes were and what was really needed and what we could live without to make it easier. And getting feedback from the people who actually lived in the process, used the process, that was really important. And we got a lot of feedback. So that's what simplification is there.
Perhaps a apropos title would have been Chief Deconstruction and Disruption Officer.
Yeah,
I'm sure you had to explore in both those facets. So let's switch gears. I want to talk a little bit about your passion for women in technology. So I know since your GE days, you've been a leader in programs and institutions focused on engaging women in STEAM. So it's science, technology, engineering, manufacturing, and you'll note these days there's an A in there, i.e. arts. So it's interesting talking about both. But tell us a bit about your efforts here.
Yeah, so kind of backing up, I went to an engineering school, and not that many years before I joined, it was an all-male school. And there was like 24 different disciplines of engineering. You could get chemical engineering, metallurgical, mechanical, et cetera. So I kind of grew up without too many females in my classes. So that's kind of where it started. I was like looking around, you know, my mechanical engineering graduation class, and there's like, you know, five of us. So it sort of started there. I was like, okay, we need to get girls or women to stay in STEM and to actually start in STEM. So this isn't really related to STEM, but at GE, I ended up creating women's networks in several different cities with the corporate women's network. And part of that, we would definitely have some STEM kind of mechanical engineering or manufacturing or operations pieces of that to help develop leaders at GE. So it started there. And then I was asked to lead GE Girls. And GE Girls is an initiative across all of GE. And there's about 15 executive women at the highest levels who are on this executive team for GE Girls. And then we have teams underneath them. We put together a program for 5th through 7th grade girls during the summer to come in and learn about STEM. And we would have experiments. So an experiment might be how to make lip gloss using chemistry, or it could be how to 3D print a bracelet, or how to make a city. And then with connections, electrical connections, how to make the city light up. And we would put these experiments together so they'd learn about it and get feedback. We had a review system, and so we knew what was working and what wasn't, and we'd change every year depending on what the feedback was. So we did this during the summers. We also found that a partnership with SWE, Society of Women Engineering, was important to continue that through high school and then into college. And then hopefully at that point, if they kind of go through college, they stay in STEM. But what's interesting is some of the research we did with girls that age is that they start to lose their confidence and they lose interest because all of a sudden engineering is around cars and maybe they're not interested in cars. They're interested in other things. And so it's about bringing something to them that they can relate to and showing them that you don't have to go work in automotive like I did to be a mechanical engineer. You can go do something else and you can make shoes. You know, you could go work for Nike. And so there's definitely things that we were trying to do to help open up their eyes to the possibilities to stay in STEM, and really enjoyed it. So I did that for a few years. And then when I went to HP, we started Women in 3D Printing at HP because we did have quite a large group of women in 3D. And so we started a group there. And then there's an external group of Women in 3D Printing that I belong to. And then lastly, I'm on the board for Women in Engineering in Silicon Valley and spent some time there mentoring and speaking to girls and women about what it meant to be in STEM. And so I kind of did the whole gamut. And my daughter's a chemical engineer. She just graduated from UCLA. So hopefully it runs in the family and she'll continue that
Well, it certainly sounds like you've taken the right steps to ensure her success and a lot of other young women. What I really appreciate is you didn't bring women to STEM in the sense that the, as you say, automotive examples and things like that, you brought STEM to women by giving them things that were relevant. You mentioned lip gloss and footwear manufacturer and things like that. Topics that are relevant there at the time that they need those relevant topics and they can relate to it. So I like the approach that you've taken. I also noted that you're a founding member of something called CHIEF. Can you say a few words about that as well?
Oh, CHIEF is amazing. It's a group of individuals who are executives in the workforce, and you get to hear leaders like Michelle Obama speak at the events, or you know, just incredible. Stacey Abrams came and spoke, and it's a really good connections group. It's a good networking. It helps with leadership development. You also have a close-knit group in your geographic area that you get together with, and you can kind of just open up and talk about issues or things that you want to see happen in your world. And you kind of bounce ideas off of each other. And there is a person who sort of moderates those discussions and helps move those along. And it's a wonderful organization, and I'm very proud to have been part of it.
I noted that Jane Arnold is part of CHIEF as well. And of course, she is the one who referred us to you and really convinced both, I think both you and us, this would be a really good podcast. And I have to definitely have to agree. Isn't she? Oh, she's wonderful. Yep. So I noted that you just left Stanley Black & Decker. So what's next for you?
You know, I am taking time for myself. I have worked a long time and I am just trying to get back to me. I'm working out a lot. I'm reading. I'm talking to you. I do have some opportunities that I'm reviewing. You know, some are in startups and some are big corporates. I'm taking this time to figure out what I want to do next. And then maybe I'll write a book. I don't know.
Well, you certainly have a rich enough bio that you could write a book, and it would be quite timely as I'm listening to the Davos sessions today. And one of the clear messages we're hearing is about attracting talent into the manufacturing or the industrial sector. And it's a common challenge with all nations. And certainly an easy answer is to provide more equality of those opportunities, right? And so it would be a very good time to have women in manufacturing voices out there, right, in that regard. So in closing, I always like to ask, where do you find your personal inspiration?
Yeah, so I mentioned earlier, I love people. And I love people's stories. And so, like, if you look by on my nightstand, it'll show biographies. Like Winston Churchill, I just absolutely love learning about him. I actually met his great-grandson and learned a lot more about him just by sitting by him on the plane. It was cool. But one of my passions is sports. And right now we're in the playoffs for the NFL, and the Chiefs, my team, Kansas City Chiefs, are in the playoffs. And I have this obsession with the coaches running the plays and the players on the field. So Patrick Mahomes is a quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. And what they're doing, the coaches and the team are studying their competitor for weeks, for months, for years, just trying to predict what they're going to do next. And so these plays are so important for the right time of the game. It's just like, and you can take that and look at how business is like that in the market and how you need to be able to pivot your business depending on what's happening in the market. We've seen that in the last few years, right? So I like to see how they're taking these plays and then they apply them on the field. And then you see, well, okay, he didn't run the play like it was supposed to. He did something else because guess what? Whatever was supposed to happen didn't happen. And so he had to get creative. And then the other thing I like, especially with the Kansas City Chiefs, is this, I think it was the last game, they were in their huddle, they got out of the huddle a little bit, and they did ring around the rosy, and then just went to the line, and just like, it was so cool. But guess what? It was innovative, it was creative, and it was to throw the competition off. And it did. It was great. So I love the Chiefs, I love the Golden State Warriors. Even after the game, I listened to all their interviews. And then I look them up while we're playing the game. If I don't know their background, I'll look them up and learn all about them because I want to know what drove them to be as successful as they are today. Like Michael Jordan, I'm sure you saw his docu-series, and it was just so good. I think I've seen it twice or three times. I just, like I mentioned before, in this kind of box two and box three of innovation, I look for kind of outside of where I'm at today for inspiration for what I could be doing in my daily world.
Oh, very nice. And an unpredictable answer. So I appreciate that even more. Talk about throwing off podcast facilitator.
I know. I probably should have given you a heads up.
So Michelle, thank you for sharing this time and insights with us today.
Thank you so much. Again, I really appreciate your time and letting me be part of this. I know you've had a lot of really interesting people on these before, including Jane Arnold, of course. I got to give her another shout out. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no, thank you. And you are a good addition to the cadre of great thought leaders that we've had on this program. So this has been Michelle Bachman, former president of Stanley X and chief simplification and transformation officer of Stanley Black & Decker. Thank you for listening, and please join us for the next episode of our Digital Thread podcast series. Thank you, and have a great day. You've been listening to the Momenta Digital Thread podcast series. We hope you've enjoyed the discussion, and as always, we welcome your comments and suggestions. Please check our website at momenta.one for archived versions of podcasts, as well as resources to help with your digital industry journey. Thank you for listening.